The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
Tonight's show, special music guest Damon Black, Randy Travis, drunken church fights, Neil Armstrong, the top movies at the box office, and much, much more tonight on Unsigned. Hey, everybody. How's it going out there? Welcome to Unsigned. My name is Ryan. It's Tuesday night, and hopefully everything is all right with you out there. Hopefully you had a nice weekend, and your work week is in full swing, and your boss is not being a complete ass to you. Hey, I've got a big show tonight. We have special music guests. I'm really excited to have this guy on. He's coming in a little bit. Damon Black from Atlanta, Georgia. This guy is going to blow your mind. Amazing, amazing, talented musician, and we're lucky to have him. Very excited, so definitely stick around for that tonight. Top movies. We're going to talk a little college football later on, so stick around for that. Some surprise games. It's hard to believe college football is here. We're going to get into that later tonight, so stick around for that as well. But I want to get off, I think, in my opinion, one of the big stories that I think didn't get a lot of play and didn't get a lot of airtime on TV, radio, in my opinion, and that is Neil Armstrong. This guy, Neil Armstrong, literally made a giant leap for mankind. He was the first human to ever step foot on the moon. He died this past Saturday at the age of 82. He died with his family due to complications due to a heart surgery he had some time ago. Neil Armstrong was described as a quiet private man. He was the heart of engineering at NASA. He was a crack test pilot. Mr. Neil Armstrong made history July 20th, 1969, as the commander of Apollo 11 spacecraft on a mission that culminated the Soviet Union's and American space race of the 1960s that the late President John F. Kennedy had committed to the nation, achieving this goal before the decade was out. And we did just that. The first man ever to walk on the moon, Neil Armstrong. Again, I'm shocked that this story did not get as much TV play as it should have. Now, credit current President Obama in a statement from the White House said that Neil Armstrong was a great American hero. I definitely believe that. I think it's a very true statement. And Neil Armstrong, you know, when he stepped on the surface of the moon, he was the first person ever to do it. Obviously, Charles F. Bolden Jr., the current NASA administrator, said, as long as there are history books, Neil Armstrong will be included in them, remembered for taking humankind's first step on the world beyond our own. I don't think it can be understated what he meant, even to a generation back in the 60s with everything that was going on, civil rights movements, lots of things happening in the 60s, lots of things happening today that we're still fighting. But Neil Armstrong, you know, really a true legend and a pioneer as far as space is concerned, and literally the first man ever to moonwalk. So I thought that was important to open the show with that, because I don't think that he got the recognition he deserved on some of the national pundits, you know, CNN, Fox News, the list goes on and on and on there. I just don't think he got enough recognition for really what he did as a human being in the country. Now, moving on tonight, another interesting story. Actor Steve McQueen, his camera car from the racing film Le Mans was sold at auction for, get this, $11 million. It is the most paid by an American car on auction to date. The 1968 powder blue Ford GT40 Mirage light blue racing car, the P-1074, finished the Gulfstream colors, landed an eye-popping final bid again of $11 million. This took place at the RM auctions in California last week. Now, McQueen also starred in The Magnificent Seven, The Thomas Crown Affair, and was an avid motorcycle and race car enthusiast, and performed his own stunts in films as well, and also took place in the 1968 detective drama Bullet. The Academy Award nominee was dubbed the King of Cool. He died at the age of 50 in 1980 after surgery from tumors from his neck and stomach. Obviously died too young, but his car that he drove in the movie, the film Le Mans, sold for $11 million, setting a record at auction for an American vehicle. Now, a couple weeks ago, we talked about Randy Travis, right? And you're like, oh, no, not the Randy Travis song you wrote again. No, 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 I'm not going to subject you to the Randy Travis song I sang a couple weeks ago. But I will say this, an extremely intoxicated Randy Travis was reportedly hospitalized Friday morning after a boozy brawl in Texas in a church parking lot. Yes, I said he was in a church parking lot. Authorities said that there was a family argument taking place between a husband and a wife, and Randy Travis got himself involved. I'm wondering if, you know, if Randy Travis gets, you know, just gets belligerently drunk and he, like, just, you know, is swinging haymakers while he's, like, you know, singing his songs like Forever and Ever, Amen, you know, just randomly swinging drunk and wildly on Jack Daniels or Wild Turkey or whatever he's drinking, you know. This is the third run-in this year alone for Randy Travis. Of course, as I mentioned a few weeks ago, he was caught on a camera in a Tiger Mart naked in the Tiger Mart trying to buy cigarettes, and then later was arrested by police officers while laying naked in the street. So Randy Travis, maybe I wonder if, you know, we can get him like opposite Jersey Shore or something. We could just have like Randy Travis fights on MTV, so they don't play videos or anything anymore. You know, maybe we could just get Randy Travis fight night following Jersey Shore on MTV, you know, and just, you know, hand him a bottle of Wild Turkey and hey, say, Randy, go at it, buddy. You know, Randy Travis soundtrack, Forever and Ever, Amen on loop, just wild haymakers. I'd watch it. I'm telling you, I would. Another story I'd like to bring to your attention tonight. This gentleman by the name of Justin Howard, known to many as Nordic Thunder. Nordic Thunder. He won the Air Guitar World Championships. This is the 17th annual competition. It took place in Finland. People from all over the world came dressed up in leather straps, bright pants, fake blood, and put on a 60-second performance with their imaginary guitar in hand. And he said that his winning performance gave him strength, and it was that he had absolutely no shame whatsoever. Well, I would hope so. If you're going to the National Air Guitar World Championships, the 17th annual, by the way, you have to have pretty much no shame to put on a 60-second performance that is just balls out. I mean, and this is a quote from Mr. Justin Howard. I'm not concerned by looking like a fool. I embrace that I play and what I look like today. Claiming his title, I feel amazing, I feel loved, and I feel like crying, laughing, and hugging. I feel the same way. Air guitar tradition, after the championship is announced, all the competitors come out and they jam air guitar style to Neil Young's Rockin' in the Free World. Yep, it's come to that. But I tell you what, tonight's guest, Damon Black from the band Dark Blue, needs no air guitar. I'll tell you that right now. If you heard anything from this guy, you know that is definitely no air guitar right there. This man can play. And coming to the Unsigned show this evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, I welcome, hailing from Atlanta, Georgia, the one, the only, Damon Black.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages.
Mr. Black, how are you doing today?
Great. How you guys doing?
I'm doing good, man. Hey, thanks for doing the show. And I want to come off and say, you know, you mentioned, you know, off the show something we want to talk about before we get into your musical career, which I'm totally fine with. And that is, you are a member of a metal alliance. What can you tell me about that?
Well, I'm a member of a heavy metal club called the Georgia Metal Alliance, and the mother chapter is here in Atlanta, Georgia. And a few years ago, I hooked up with some like-minded brothers and sisters who listen to the same kind of music I listen to and, you know, are into the same kind of things that I'm into. And, you know, throughout the years, these guys have always been – their family is what they are. And, you know, they've always been – there for me. I've always been there for them. And I'm looking forward to, you know, bringing more shows to them and, you know, showing them some love right here and now. I want to send a shout out to all my brothers and sisters, particularly our international president, Nick Damiani, as well as the rest of the family. Much love to the Georgia Metal Alliance.
Good to hear. I'm glad that, you know, you have a strong group there in the area that you're in, and really a true music scene, which I think is it's always good to hear when you hear those type of close-knit groups. I really dig that. When you mentioned that to me a couple nights ago, I was like, yeah, man, I was like, let's definitely talk about that. And again, thank you for bringing it up. Now, I want to get back into you now as far as your musical talent. And many people may not know this. You play guitar, you play bass, and you also build your own guitars, which I find very amazing. When did you discover, at what age did you discover you really had this musical talent?
Well, in I'd always been into music, but in 1980, my parents asked myself, my stepbrother, my stepsister, well, if you guys wanted to play some instruments, what would you want to play? And I chose guitar. At that time, I was picking up influences everywhere. I was listening to R&B, jazz, some classical. And then I picked up on blues. I started listening to guys like Howlin' Wolf and Blind Lemon Jefferson. And what attracted me to the blues was the feeling and the amount of emotion that these guys could pull out of every single note. So for the start, for me, it was about trying to express some emotion with every single note. And then somewhere up the chain, I heard Hendrix, and that pretty much sent me straight into rock and into the higher volume segments, and it was still mostly pentatonic. But what really led me to metal was in 1980, and it was in the fall of 1980. I had a severe case of bronchitis. I was very sick. I was at home, and I was having trouble sleeping. This was when I started developing the sleep disorder, insomnia, which I have now. And I spent a lot of time awake at night. So a friend let me borrow four albums, which ended up defining the core of my style. It was Black Sabbath's Heaven and Hell, Iron Maiden's Killers, Metallica's Kill 'Em All, and a Slayer album. I cannot remember the title of it, but I see it as clear as day in my mind's eye. But from there on, it was metal for me. Prior to that, I listened to just about everything. But after that, it was all the way metal.
Very cool. Now, as far as I think you might be one of the first like true metal acts we've had on the show. So I'm a metalhead all the way. So I'm kind of picky when I hear metal bands. I'm like, and I heard your stuff. I was like, man, we have to get this guy on. So again, looking at, and when you said to me that you build your own guitars, when did you start tinkering with that? I mean, was this kind of right around the time when you got into metal in the early 80s?
Well, what happened was when I started, and this will let you know how old I really am, in 1980, there was Gibson and there was Fender. They were kind of expensive, so those weren't options I could readily go for with a little job working at a fast food place. So what I ended up doing in the beginning, and I got this idea because I read a lot, and I was reading about how Edward Van Halen decided to build his own guitars because he had the same thing going that I had. I liked the tone of the Gibsons with the humbuckers, but I wanted to have a tremolo or a vibrato, you know, with the arm and be able to play around with that. But you couldn't get the two in the same guitars back then because you had Fender with single coils and Gibson with the humbuckers. So I bought copy guitars from pawn shops, Strat copies, Fender Strat copies, and Les Paul copies, and I would pretty much gut the Les Paul electronics and do some wood shaving to get the pickups to fit into the Fender. And then I had discovered that, you know, that's sort of kind of the same thing that Dave Murray of Iron Maiden did. He took a Strat and did some cutting and managed to get humbuckers to fit in. So you could get that fuller sound with less hum. And sure, you could get the vibrato work in there, so you could do some of that crazy arm stuff that Edward Van Halen had started that we all ended up picking up on. But initially, it was, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. I wasn't born rich, so in order to get the tone I was hearing in my head, I had to come up with ways to develop that. And I'll tell you, in the early days, I messed up a lot of guitars. I spent a lot of money screwing up guitars. But eventually, when I bought aftermarket parts, they would come with wiring diagrams. And I got lucky there because DiMarzio, I think, was the first company to put out wiring diagrams. So I would go ahead and use those wiring diagrams and a soldering iron from Radio Shack. God, I spent so much time at Radio Shack. They almost know me by name. And I would rewire everything and set it up. And just through trial and error, basically learned how to build guitars. Back in those days, you could go, there were music stores in Atlanta where you could go and buy the parts and just assemble everything and build yourself a guitar. Nowadays, you have eBay and online, and you can buy parts pretty much from all over the world from the internet.
Very, very interesting stuff, man. Now, I know you've been working on a new EP, but this next song that we have, Premonition, is from your first, or an earlier EP. I think you said it came out earlier this year. Is that right?
Yeah, January 1st, I released my first EP. I, as you stated earlier, you know, I play the guitar and the bass. I program a drum machine because I don't have a drummer who can play the type of hard hitting double bass driving beats that I needed for the songs I was writing. So again, necessity is a mother of invention. I just did it all myself. I've got a home studio and my trusty Shure SM57, which I'm talking through now, and just basically. Well, let me backtrack to one thing earlier. In the mid '80s, I studied recording engineering at what used to be called the Music Business Institute here in Atlanta, and that was audio recording with analog mixing boards. Now, of course, mostly everything's digital, but a lot of the same principles carry over, and you can use a lot of those same principles with today's equipment. So basically, in my home studio, I went ahead and recorded everything for my EP, and I paid studio session singers to do the vocals for my songs and four-song EP.
Very cool. Now, this next song, Premonition, I mean, how has your music style changed from the stuff that you're writing right now to what we're going to hear tonight?
Premonition is... it's progressive, but it's heavy. And what happens is that there are timing changes, but everything's being driven by the drums. So the timing changes are being driven by a heavy double bass drum oriented type of rhythm section. And it's just pushing and driving the whole thing. It's the foundation of the whole thing, really.
Very cool. Well, here is a cut off that EP. This is Dark Blue featuring Damon Black, Premonition, here on Unsigned. Blue featuring Damon Black, Premonition, here on Unsigned. I really dig that stuff, man. Now, obviously a female vocalist here, and we talked about this off air, and I want to talk to you about it now. You've obviously worked with some different female artists. Is there a certain type of female vocalist you're looking for?
Well, you know, in the genre that I play, you usually have one of two things happening. You usually have a screamer with very heavy music, or you have a singer who's a soprano with the highs, and the music is sort of toned down. Sure. What I decided to do was something completely different from what everybody else is doing, and I didn't want a screamer. And what I'm going for, here's the description of the singer I'm looking for. She, if Ronnie James Dio was reincarnated as a Victoria's Secret model with a high soprano voice, tone, pitch, and complete command of high notes like, I don't know, Mariah Carey, with my music.
Sure.
That's kind of what I'm going for. And, you know, for obvious reasons, she's got to be like the hottest thing anybody's ever seen, because that's the first thing that catches your eye. But that's the gateway drug, because the real thing that is supposed to pull you in is her voice. She can't just be okay or all right. When you hear her voice, your jaw's got to drop on the floor and you've got to be going like, wow. And this is why it takes me so long to find the right singer for my band, because, you know, I'll find somebody that's more of this, less of that, and just not the right singer for the group.
Sure, I understand. Now, when you bring in different female singers, I have to ask you about the lyrical content. Now, do the singers usually partake in this, or is this something you already kind of have prepared, and then at that point you present it to the female singer?
Well, what has happened is I've got 46 original songs. I've written the lyrics for all of them except for the three instrumentals. So basically what has happened is that there is a company in California called Studio Pros, and they have a bunch of studio vocalists. And what you do is you submit the song, you submit the lyrics, and you give them a sort of guide vocal. I'm not a singer, but I can carry a pitch, but I don't sound like Dio, in other words. So I couldn't do it. Besides, singing and playing guitar for me doesn't happen. So what happens is that I give them a guide vocal, and basically they ask you, well, how do you want it? And what I basically tell them is to interject yourself into the song, read the lyrics, listen to the lyrics, and feel the song and make it yours. And basically what they do is they inject themselves into the song, and they sing it, you know, the way that they feel it as far as the lyrics go. And basically, all the heavy lifting is done. I'm just handing them a lyric sheet and the music, and, you know, go with it type of thing.
Very. I'm sure that's definitely hard to, you know, find someone that definitely you're, you know, connecting with. Best of luck. Hopefully you find someone that, you know, you can work with long term, because I really dig your music. Guitar work is great, and the drum tracks I think are very, very fun as well. Now, is there certain bands or groups that you listen to in your free time? Like, you know, any new bands out there, or, you know, recent stuff that, you know, maybe, you know, you catch on the radio or you hear on Twitter or YouTube or something, you go, oh, I'm going to check those guys out. Is there anybody that's kind of speaking to you right now?
Well, you know, it's funny. I listen to a lot of death metal. I listen to stuff that's probably heavier than what I would actually end up playing, particularly considering that I don't own or play a seven string. If I ever go that route, I'll end up being as heavy as those guys. But, I tell you who I like that, since Mike Portnoy left Dream Theater, I like his band Adrenaline Mob. I like them a lot. They sound very different from what any of the members of that band sound like in the bands they were in. I like Divine Heresy. They're one of the newer bands. They're extremely heavy, though. They're something that a lot of people, you would really have to be into the heavier stuff to listen to them. Who else? I listen to Arch Enemy. They're extremely heavy too, and they have a female singer, but she screams.
Yes.
But in their case, it works because of how hot she is. Nobody cares that she's screaming. So, and basically I still stick by, a lot of my influences. I've been listening to a lot of Dream Theater lately. They're not a new band. They're an older band. They've been around a while, but because their stuff is progressive, it's begun to influence a lot of the way I write. Usually I write straight up headbanger material, but as I've listened to bands like Dream Theater, Symphony X, some of the more progressive bands, and I've always been a Rush fan, you can tell I listen to a lot of the older stuff. A lot of that stuff is progressive and has timing changes that involve changes in timing, changes in tempo within the context of the song, which, by the way, is really difficult to program with a drum machine. It takes some amazing trickiness to get that kind of stuff to work. But But yeah, a lot of the stuff I listen to, you're not going to find on the radio.
Sure.
You know, most of the kids that listen to the popular stuff will have never heard of it. But right now, I would say that Adrenaline Mob comes to mind because of Mike Portnoy, the drummer, ex-drummer from Dream Theater.
No, I haven't particularly heard that project. I'm familiar with Dream Theater. Dream Theater, in my opinion, is one of those bands you either love them or hate them, I think. You know, it's either you're really into it or you're like, what the heck is this? You know, so I enjoy some of their stuff, and there's other stuff I'm like, I don't know if I'm into it or not. But another band that I think – I don't know if you like these guys or not is Opeth, another band that – you know,
I forgot about them. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, they're another one I like.
I mean, they have a lot of different time changes. They do the, you know, the high melodic voice and stuff. And initially when I first heard some of your stuff, it kind of – reminded me of them a little bit. Very intricate, very, you know, a lot of time changes and you know, just really intricate music. Now, the next song off the EP that came out earlier this year is Fall From Grace. What can you tell me about this track?
That one is basically about, it's about betrayal. I've gone through that several times in my lifetime, but basically it's about how, you know, we sometimes hold people up to a high standard and then, you know, they fall from grace by doing something that we didn't expect, that's some sort of betrayal. And it's the way that we feel, you know, once we realize that we've been betrayed.
Very well put. This is Dark Blue featuring Damon Black here on Unsigned, Fall From Grace. Fall From Grace by Dark Blue featuring Damon Black here on Unsigned. Very good stuff again, man. Now, I know you've been writing the new EP, which I think you said is going to be coming out sometime here this fall or even early winter. Have you had time to unwind while writing the album, catch any good movies or anything like that lately?
Well, actually, what I did was I thought that I was going to stop building guitars. And so I bought myself a Randy Rhoads Jackson guitar that I found at Guitar Center at an amazing price. I've always been a big Randy Rhoads fan. He's another guitarist that influenced me. But then I also, a couple days later, bought another Jackson, a JS-32 Dinky. And for whatever reason, the quality wasn't there. So I started throwing parts at the problem. I replaced the neck, replaced the pickups, yanked out the wiring. It wouldn't stay in tune. It didn't sound right. I got pissed off, yanked it to pieces, just tore it to pieces, took everything out, and decided to build two more guitars. And the first of which is done. It's an Ibanez RG Custom that I will be featuring on the upcoming EP. And then I've got a Charvel Strat that I am finishing, hopefully by the end of this week, that the way I usually do it is I use one guitar for rhythm and one guitar for solos, because one sounds better for one thing than the other in terms of recording. Live, everything's good for all of them, but for whatever reason, recording-wise, one thing sounds better than the other. So I spent most of my summer rebuilding that Jackson guitar several times and just wasn't happy with it, and then rebuilt these two other guitars in one night each, and they worked great. So that was my summer, pretty much. I would have gone to see the Dark Knight Returns, but something spooked me out of doing that. So,
what spooked you out of seeing that?
Well, you know, that the Dark Knight Rises incident out there in Colorado, I think it was.
I guess that, you know, that definitely put a sour taste, so to speak, in a lot of people's mouth. We talked about that on the show as well, and it's definitely a tragedy, especially for such an innocent event that, you know, you would take a preteen to, you would take your, you know, wife or girlfriend to, or go to your buddies to go catch a late movie or something. For something like that to happen is just, it really, you know, really kind of makes you wonder, like, you know, is there some other nut out there? And there actually was a guy in the Cleveland, Ohio area, out where I grew up, of course, in Northeast Ohio. Of course, it'd have to be some lunatic in that area, but that actually got caught in the theater lobby with a handgun and two clips on him.
Yeah, that's the kind of scary thing that's, you know, been going around lately is, you know, people just there's a song that I wrote which is due to be on the third album whenever I get signed. Basically, I've got four albums worth of material plus the EP plus the second EP. There's a song I wrote called Losing Grip, which talks about, you know, the kinds of things that, you know, we go through in daily life. And basically it's a story about a guy. I don't know if you guys ever saw a movie called Falling Down with Michael Douglas. It came out about 5 or 6 years ago. And basically it's a story similar to that, where a guy loses his job, his wife is sleeping with his best friend, his dog gets killed, and he just loses grip. And the song goes along the way towards showing how, you know, a stack of events, all negative in a person's life, can just drive them right over the edge.
Yeah, I've actually seen that movie, and that's a great concept for a song and really for a movie as well. He's great in that film where, you know, I think, isn't there one where he goes to like a Burger King or a McDonald's or something, and he freaks out because he can't have breakfast because it's like 2 minutes after 10 a.m. and he like shoots the ceiling.
that's the one. He's you know, he starts out his day stuck in traffic, gets out of his car, walks away. Some guys try to rob him. He ends up robbing them, steals their guns, goes to that Burger King. He can't get breakfast, shoots up the place. And just one thing leads to another, and he just completely loses grip by the end of the movie.
Yeah, it's a great film. And it's interesting you brought that up, especially in light of what happened in Aurora, Colorado with the shooting and that lunatic out there. Now, kind of bringing this around, you know, the new EP, you mentioned you're recording it. Do you have a release date or a name for the new EP by chance?
You know, I've thought and thought and thought about it, and I think that the best thing to call it would be Center of One, because what for me it is, it's about a journey that I have taken over the past several years in working with different musicians, not finding anybody that was reliable that I could work with. And it's funny, one of these guitars that I built is actually a rebuild, and I've rebuilt this Ibanez maybe 17 times since 2007, and wow, had never been happy with it completely until I rebuilt this thing on Sunday night. And it's sort of a journey back to the center of oneness where I began. So I think I'm going to call it Center of One, and it's about coming full circle. So the songs are going to tell a story that starts in one place and leads you right back around to the front.
Very cool. Well, I appreciate you sharing that information with us. Now, these songs tonight are not off that new EP. These are off the EP that came out in January. Maybe once you get things wrapped up, you'd like to come back on towards the end of the year, and we can get a chance to jam some of the songs on the show. Would you be into that?
Great. I should be done with it probably by the end of October, hopefully. If I'm pleased with everything, I'm kind of hard on myself when it comes to recordings. If I don't like it, I'll keep redoing it till I am. So hopefully I can avoid being obsessive compulsive about it and get it done by the end of October.
Fair enough. Okay. Sorry to put you on the spot there. Perfectionist, nothing wrong with that. Mike, our producer and the founder of Omnis TV, definitely can relate. Mike is a perfectionist, love him to death, but he is definitely a perfectionist, and that's why he's as good as he is. Now, wrapping again, you know, we're kind of hitting all over the place here, which is fine. Talking with Damon Black from Dark Blue here on Unsigned. This is Ryan. Football season, I mentioned the top of the show, right around the corner, really kind of crept up on everybody. Do you find time during football season? You know, you're a Falcons fan, you know, get into the Georgia Bulldogs in college or anything like that?
Oh, I make time for football. I have to have football. That's the only really bad thing about the summer is there's no football. And, you know, the Arena Football League doesn't cut it for me. So, yeah, when it comes to – and I'm completely into the whole BCS thing and the national championship thing. I will stop whatever I'm doing to watch football. As far as the Falcons go, I was really surprised that they managed to beat Miami the way they did this weekend. I was like, huh? I'm beginning to think that maybe they ought to hire Samuel Jackson on full time, because every time he comes through with that commercial deal, they seem to get inspired or something.
But I think that if the Falcons are going to do it this year, this is the year, I think, that for them to really take that step with Matt Ryan and all the talent they have on that roster and all the, I mean, let's face it, all the money they've spent on that roster as well. There's a lot of money tied up in wide receivers, running backs, and on that defensive line. I think if they're going to do it, this is the year to do it, especially with the turmoil in New Orleans with the Saints and college football. I'm right there with you, man. Every week is a big time game. I tell you, you're a Georgia Bulldog fan.
I am, and I'm always rooting for Georgia, and the only time I root for Tech is when they're not playing Georgia.
Fair enough. Now, later in the show, I'm actually making my upset pick. I won't ruin it right now, so stick around for that, and that it does involve Georgia Tech, but I guess I kind of ruined it there, but hey. But another thing I want to get back into the music side of things, you know, what is – your view, I mean, the record industry and the music industry as a whole, as far as where it stands today, has changed an awful lot, especially in the last 10 years alone. And, you know, you've been in music for quite a long time. How do you view the record industry and the music industry today as it stands?
Well, you know, the music industry would have loved it if Napster had never come along and people couldn't download songs. And this, of course, led to Apple with iTunes and the iPod and all this and all that. But, you know, a lot has changed. Physical media is on the decline. A lot more people are buying their songs from iTunes and Spotify and Rhapsody and Amazon MP3. And with the rise of tablets and smartphones, people are using their phones to download songs directly to their handhelds. And that changes things for the record companies, because – you know, they're mostly sticking to the old model of CDs and you know, buying albums or CDs and things of that nature. So they're as far behind as you can get. And, you know, it just the rise of digital media and the Internet has pretty much changed things. And now we have a situation where for example, guys like me, I've produced my own songs. I have worldwide distribution digitally through iTunes and Spotify and Rhapsody and all these websites. And the only thing that artists really lack, you know, like me who are, you know, on a budget, is really funding or sponsorship to tour. I'm looking at probably either the end of this year, early next year, forming my own indie label to try and come up with the financing to be able to tour, because that's really the only place. To be honest, when it comes to signing contracts, most musicians are really looking for that that advance check in order to buy equipment and be able to tour, because the touring funds everything else, really, to be honest.
Sure. Yeah, and then you have to recoup that money back to the record label.
You know, due to, you know, the difficulties in finding band members and, you know, getting signed and all of that, I'm looking at, since I have, since I'm basically recording and producing my own music, and I already have digital distribution worldwide, which is, you know, one of the main two things that bands want to get signed to get, because in the old days, the only way you got distribution was with a record company, because they had the physical stores, the physical media, and the distribution channels. Now, because we can do it from the internet 24/7, we don't really need them for that. Tour funding is the only thing that that we as musicians, you know, really need to be able to, you know, pay roadies and managers and, you know, for accommodations and travel and that sort of thing. So I decided I was going to go ahead and to close to the end of this year, probably early next year, go ahead and form my own indie label. Haven't chosen a name yet, because at the time that you process the paperwork, you have to choose a name, and hopefully somebody doesn't already have it, so I won't announce it yet. But, that's the plan ultimately, to form an indie label and look for funding to continue operations and find some band members and start touring, playing some shows.
Love it, man. Hey, Damon, appreciate you coming on, man, and sorry about the glitch there, but hey, anytime you want to come on and just talk – whatever it is, man, you're an easy guy to talk to. We really appreciate you coming on. We have another track we're going to hear from you tonight when we'll close the interview. But if people want to get a hold of you, want to get more of your music, how can they do that?
On Twitter, I am at dark_blue1. My primary domain or website where my EP can be purchased off one of my links is darkblue.com. And on Reverb Nation, all 46 of my original tracks can be heard. That's www.reverbnation.com/darkblue, all one word, and that's DARKBLU, no E. And that's where you can find me.
Wonderful. Damon, hey, again, man, thanks for coming on. Best of luck to you. Stay in touch. And we'll close tonight with Katana here on Unsigned. featuring Damon Black, our special guest tonight with Katana. And again, thanks to Damon Black for stopping in. Always a pleasure to have someone like that on the show. One who's a great musician and really just a great person to talk to as well. Our pleasure again. Thanks for taking the time to come on the Unsigned show tonight. We still have more things to cover, so don't go anywhere. We're talking NCAA football. I know it's hard to believe football starts this week. NFL starts the week after that. Thursday night, the college season officially begins, and what a way to kick it off. The South Carolina Gamecocks, the old ball coach Steve Spurrier, heading to Nashville to take on the Vanderbilt Commodores. And everyone's like, dude, they're taking on Vanderbilt? This is not your same old Vanderbilt Commodores kick him in the mouth. Now, James Franklin in Vanderbilt in Nashville is really building something here. This team, I think, is going to be a big surprise in the SEC and really, I think, across the country in years to come. Now, I don't think they're necessarily going to win this game per se, but I think they're going to give South Carolina all they can handle in a divisional game. Opening up the season is always tough. But with that being said, I expect the Gamecocks, who I think are the favorite to win the SEC East. It's either them or the Georgia Bulldogs, I think, win the SEC East. And I think they get a really tough road divisional game out of the way in Vanderbilt. Set up for a very, very solid season. Now, Saturday night is the big primetime game. This is really two storied franchises clashing head-to-head on a neutral site. Well, sort of a neutral site. It takes place in Cowboys Stadium in Dallas, Texas. So, let's see. Alabama, Dallas, Texas, Michigan. Who do you think has the advantage there? I would think Alabama. Their fans aren't traveling all that far to get to Dallas as opposed to Michigan's fans, who do travel well, I might add. But let me say this. Alabama has won two of the last three national championships under Nick Saban, and they are loaded, returning 10 starters from the national title team last year. I expect Bama not only to beat Michigan, I expect them to stomp Michigan in the ground by at least 17 points, if not more. Look, I think this Michigan team is very, very overrated at the number 8 seed. Number 8 in the country. I just don't see it. Yeah, I understand. You know, they have some explosive talent on offense and a Heisman hopeful at quarterback. I still don't think this Wolverine team is going. I don't even think they're winning the Big Ten. I think they're more likely to go 10-2 or 9-3 on the season. And one of those losses is going to come opening night, primetime Saturday night in Dallas, Texas Stadium, where Alabama is going to whoop on some Wolverine. That's just my opinion. Now, other games to look forward to, and a team that I think is very undervalued in the Big Ten, that is Michigan State. They have, I think they've not only have been undervalued in the Big Ten, they've been overlooked on a national level, too. This team lost one game last year and didn't even go to a BCS bowl game. I'm talking about being overlooked. A team that they beat, Michigan, got a chance to go to the Sugar Bowl, and they did not. So I think Michigan State is out to prove something this year. They have a very, very solid veteran defense. A lot of those guys on the defense are going to be playing in the NFL. They open up the season hosting Boise State, a team that's been in the top 25 of national title talk for year after year after year. Look, I expect the Spartans team to make a statement and shine and prove a point to everyone in the NCAA and across the country that they are for real, and I really think Michigan State wins the Big Ten this year. Now, my upset alert, as I mentioned earlier with Damon Black in our interview, Georgia Tech heading up to Blacksburg to take on Virginia Tech. Now, I know Coach Beamer and the Virginia Tech are always a very solid team. They always play fundamentally sound football. But heading on the road, Georgia Tech, they have that triple offense, the triple option offense. That's hard to prepare for, especially for a week one meeting, opening up the season. And Georgia Tech, I think, is a very, very solid ball club playing in the ACC. I expect Georgia Tech and that triple option offense to give Frank Beamer's Virginia Tech, the Hokies, a whole lot of trouble and give them all they can handle. I think that's my upset of the week. Biggest blow of the week, it's week one NCAA college football. Take your pick. Lots of cupcakes on the schedule here, especially in the top 25. Most of them in the big bad SEC. This is some of the SEC opponents this week. North Texas, Buffalo, Bowling Green, Jacksonville State. Yeah. Well, USC plays Hawaii. I'm just wondering how much of a statement the Trojans are looking to make playing Hawaii week one. They are the preseason number one. They're rated number one. The only team to ever stay number one from start to finish and win the national title is USC, and I expect them. This team, I talked about it a couple weeks ago, this team is loaded. As far as their starting 11 on offense, their starting 11 on defense, they are as good as anybody in the country.
I'm not just saying that because it's USC, is because they are. Now, injury plays a factor, obviously, when you're playing football. This team is not very deep because of the sanctions and loss of scholarships and all those things they went through with the Reggie Bush issue. But I expect USC to be there at the end. A lot of people were talking Florida State. Yeah, I don't buy the Florida State thing. A lot of people talked about them last year. What happened? They disappointed. They got beat up by an okay Oklahoma team. Their schedule is very, very weak this year, so it's a possibility Florida State will sneak in there. But their strength of schedule, I don't see them being picked over even a one-loss SEC team and an undefeated USC team. I just don't see it happening. So I think USC and probably either Alabama or LSU, barring some major shakeup in the SEC, will probably fade for the national title, which would be one heck of a ball game. Other news, Lance Armstrong is facing a loss of 7 Tour de France titles, and his championship legacy is pretty much ending at this point against charges for illegal doping. The U.S. Anti-Doping Agency on Friday slapped a lifetime ban on the athlete and stripped him of all his winnings from dating back to 1998. Again, that is 7 Tour de France championships. Now, the Anti-Doping Agency President John Faley said on Australian radio this past weekend that the allegations against Armstrong are credible, and he said that he is disappointed the case would not be retested because Armstrong's decision to not challenge the charges. You know why he's not challenging the charges? Because they're true. Now, I don't think people care that much about cycling, but this is a big deal. I mean, this guy, you know, fought cancer, beat cancer, and really did a lot of good, really, in the community and for cancer research. Not taking any of that away from them, but he was using illegal drugs to gain an advantage, and probably one of the dirtiest sports other than baseball there is. So with that being said, Lance Armstrong now has to walk everywhere he goes. No more bicycling for him. Take that man's bicycle away. Closing tonight with our top movies, starting with number 10, working our way up to number 1 like we always do. Number 10, Hit and Run at $4.5 million. The movie Hope Springs at $5.7 million. Premium Rush at $6 million. 2016, Obama's America, $6.5 million. A lot of brainwashing going on in that film, I'm sure. The Odd Life of Timothy Green, $7.1 million. The Dark Knight, still in the top 5 at $7.2 million. The Campaign, $7.4 million. I hope people don't get The Campaign and the 2016 Obama America confused as far as the actual campaign that's going on right now between Romney and Obama. I hope they don't get those two confused. Paranorman, $8.6 million. The Bourne Legacy, $9.3 million. And the number one film, action film, The Expendables 2. I mean, there's about everybody in this. Jean-Claude Van Damme, Chuck Norris, Bruce Willis, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Is in the movie as well, and Stallone, of course, Expendables 2 at $13.4 million. That's all I've got for you tonight. I'd like to thank you for tuning in to Unsigned. Seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so, everybody.